Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
Alive to Thrive. That was a selection from Holly Tucker, Story of My Life. And Holly was on Alive to Thrive about a year ago and has some beautiful Christmas music. Wanted to just give her a shout out. But Story of My Life, some of those words kind of reminded me of the guest we're having on today, Maria Rogers O'Rourke, a dear friend. I've known her for about 10 years, and she's one of the authors featured at Butterfly and Moon at 814 South Main Street in historic St. Charles. And we are having a book signing with Maria tomorrow on Saturday, December 5th from 2 to 4. We'll have some of her books there, Prepare Your Heart for a Great Christmas. And this book has been selling really well. It's a nice little book to give as a gift or yourself to help you get centered and enjoy the holidays. So welcome, Maria. How are you?
Thank you, Brenda. I'm doing great. It's wonderful to be with you.
Yes, I'm so thankful that you were able to call in, and I know you're in the midst of writing your third book, and we'll get to that topic, but okay. Let's just talk a little bit about your creative life, how you got started, because we have a lot of listeners that are thinking about writing a book, quote, you know, someday, and they may or may not ever get around to it, but how did you get started in writing, and what did you do to just get, you know, your thoughts on paper and get it published?
Sure, yeah. Well, you know, it takes a lot of baby steps, I think would be the best way to describe it. I think for a long time I waited for the quote-unquote right time to start writing, you know, that when I had more time, when life would settle down, when things wouldn't be so crazy. And what I learned as a grown-up and especially as a mom is that it never really does slow down or get less crazy. And so I needed to be more intentional about taking the time to write. And so one of the biggest turning points for me was doing the book The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. Mm-hmm. And in that book, she has a wonderful process for recovering the hidden artist. And one of the steps that she invites people to do is to do write what she calls morning pages. And morning pages are a stream of consciousness set of about three pages that first thing in the morning you get up and you just start writing. And it's really, you know, kind of a brain dump of, you know, whatever you wake up with in the morning that's on your mind, and you want to just kind of get that clutter out of the way so that you can focus on specific projects, or, you know, to focus in on some finding your intention and your meaning for the day. I found the morning pages to be so helpful, because what would happen to me is I'd wake up in the morning, and as soon as my brain clicked in, I'd start thinking about everything I had to do that day. And not only was my head cluttered with all those details, but I was starting to get anxious and nervous about the day, too, just, you know, wondering, am I going to get it all done?
And
the pages really...
I think The Artist's Way is a great book, and we actually had Julia Cameron on Alive to Thrive a few years ago. I was so lucky
to have her on
my program, calling in from, I think, Arizona is where she lives, or somewhere in the Southwest. But she has helped so many people, and that is a book I definitely recommend to everyone, The Artist's Way. And she has a website, and people can get started writing those morning pages every day to get the clutter out of your mind. And she also recommends going for walks and taking yourself on an artist date. So which book did you do first, Prepare Your Heart to Be a Great Mom or Prepare Your Heart for a Great Christmas?
Prepare Your Heart for a Great Christmas. And, you know, there's an old adage about write what you know, and I love the Christmas season. And yet, as a mom with two young daughters, I found myself really getting caught up in the stress of the season. And I thought, you know, this just isn't right. I want to be able to be more at peace and to enjoy my family and enjoy the season more. And so I set out to write the book, which is a series of daily reflections. They're very short. They're just an opportunity to slow down and ponder the season for a few moments. And then on the facing page, across from the reflection, is a space to journal. And so the reader is invited to talk about what their intention is for the day, what they're grateful for that day, and to jot down some of their to-do list for that day. So, you know, that might sound familiar with the Maria that was waking up in the morning so anxious about her day, you know, that I think that if we can bring our sense of spirituality into every dimension of our lives, it can make a real difference in how we approach what we do and the level of anxiety with which we have when we're trying to do it. So
I agree. And so talk to us a little bit about the difference between spirituality and religion, because a lot of people will go to church on Sunday and sort of check that off their list, and yet between Monday and Saturday, they're crazy people. But how do you differentiate spirituality, and how did you come into your own spiritual awakening?
Wow, that's a huge question. Let's see. I've heard it said, and I wish I could quote the author exactly, that religion is someone else's experience of God, and spirituality is your own experience of God.
Mm.
And so I think that oftentimes religion can be a very helpful process that leads us into a deeper relationship with God. And I think spirituality is our intentionality about that. You know, I believe that all of us have a soul or have a connection to God, to universe, to the greater unconsciousness, whatever language we would use to describe that. I do believe there's a benevolent force in the universe that wills us good, and that is the spark behind our creativity and, you know, bringing new life and healing into the world. And so for me, spirituality has been an openness to that presence in my life, and then being willing to take the time pretty much on a daily basis to reconnect with that that sense in my life, and to invite it in and to try to live out of that as fully as I can.
Well, I love that you said a benevolent force for good, because that's part of my tagline, force for good. But, you know, now with the new Star Wars coming out, may the force be with you. But the terrible news that just recently came out of Paris and now out of Southern California, how can people tune that stuff out, filter out all the incredible violence that we see and hear on the media? Because you can get really, I noticed I was getting really caught up in the Paris coverage, and I was not sleeping well, and I was like almost addicted to watching, like, what's the next new discovery, and have they got the bad guy yet? And I realized I had to turn the TV off. But what are your recommendations for people to, you know, not let that sort of pollute their minds this time of year?
Yes, I think there's a couple of things. I totally agree with your strategy of turning off the TV. And I don't say that to be, you know, put your head in the sand to pretend like you don't know what's going on. But I think that we are in an age where we can be so beset with communication. And as you said, you know, hearing every little detail as it comes out, and it can become kind of an obsessive thing. And that's bad for us. And I think we know anything in life if we expose ourselves to it too much, or if we, you know, do anything out of moderation, we know that that's bad for us. And so it is good to just turn the channel off, maybe take a break from Facebook, take that break from media in order to clear your head a little bit. And in fact, our friend Julia Cameron would recommend the same thing. That's one of the exercises in her book, is to take a break from media. The other thing that I've found too in my own faith life is that when we take an opportunity to try to raise those who are perpetrating some of the bad actions in the world, and to raise them up into the light, and to really to pray for them, you know, that there could be some healing and some understanding of what their motives were, and to seek forgiveness for those actions. And I found that, there's a passage in Scripture about praying for those who persecute you. And it's one of the hardest things to do, because we often want to defend ourselves against those that hurt us. And in my own experience, when I've been able to pray for difficult people in my life, not that they change, but that I just would pray for them in general, you know, because they too are loved by this benevolent force in the universe. And so to sort of hold them in that helps lighten the load for me, you know. I don't resist them so much or feel so opposed to them. And that has brought a sense of peace for me as well. As difficult as it can be to think in those terms, I think when we enter into that more peaceful place and we can lift those people up somehow, it can help lighten the load for us.
That is very powerful stuff. And, you know, that anger and that bitterness and that resentment doesn't really ultimately hurt them any. It hurts yourself and your own biochemistry, which we know is related to stress and elevated stress, and can lead to elevated cortisol levels, which can lead to inflammation and a host of illness and things. And there is, you know, that's been proven scientifically that there's that link. But let's also talk about some real practical tips for moms with kids, or for anyone going through the holiday season, where, you know, it's less than 3 weeks away till we have Christmas here, and there's a lot to get done. There's anxiety around travel plans and security at airports and things like that. There's certainly just getting your house clean and getting, you know, your shopping done and things like that. But and just also the last fiscal quarter, if you're a business owner, there's a lot of pressure to meet certain sales goals by the end of the year. So
sure.
Let's talk about that. What are some ways to reduce stress?
Oh, I know. It's a constant, isn't it, Brenda? I mean, I think it's just we all sometimes feel so besieged from every area of our lives about attending to things that need to be done. There was a women's group that I met with a few years back, and they were using my book, Prepare Your Heart for a Great Christmas, as a guide for their discussion and conversation during the holidays. And we were sitting in a circle, and we went around the circle, and I asked the group, what are you looking forward to with Christmas coming? And I think that we were meeting probably the second or third week of November. You know, we were just ahead of Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And we went around the circle, and everyone spoke of different traditions that they looked forward to, or maybe loved ones they were going to see and that sort of thing. And there was one woman, by the time we got to her, she had tears streaming down her face. And everybody reached out to her, honey, what is wrong? What's going on? And she said, when I think about the amount of work that I have to do in the next 6 weeks, I don't think I can stand it. And you know, Brenda, there's just something fundamentally wrong with that picture, isn't there? That all the music and the decorations would tell us this is the most wonderful time of the year, and I think women, worst of all, really struggle under the stress of the expectations of the season and not wanting to let other people down. And I think in some ways, I hate to say this, but I think that women can be their worst enemy this time of year. And that is that they can have very high expectations of what they want to accomplish and how they want to please other people. And more often than not, they don't take care of themselves in the midst of trying to take care of everyone else and trying to live up to these expectations. Mm-hmm. Part of the problem is that they may have people in their household who can help them with what they want to get done at Christmas time, but they also have very specific ideas about how they want those things done.
And maybe it's releasing some of that, you know, releasing some of those expectations. And I like what you said about carving out time for yourself. I know last night we went to the symphony to see Handel's Messiah, and, you know, here I am, you know, we're retail business owners. This is the busiest time of our year. We're working 60, 70 hours a week, but I knew we needed to take a break before it got too crazy and too much closer to Christmas to just take some time, listen to some amazing music. You know, so it, whether it's going to the symphony or going to a movie or just going out to dinner, you know, carving out some time for yourself. We're hosting a little tea party on Sunday at the shop at Butterfly and Moon. And I mean, that's another little thing you can do. You can go to a tea party. You can create your own tea party and just invite a couple of friends together. It's a great way, you know, instead of exchanging gifts that, you know, maybe they don't even, you know, we feel like we have to give somebody something. You don't have to. Spending your time is the best gift of all. And, you know, just getting together for, you know, a little girl's day out, you know, have lunch down on Main Street or anywhere else and go to, you know, go shopping together as a group. But
yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think that it's important for women. And again, as I say, we allow ourselves to become last on the list. We put everything else ahead of ourselves. And then we wonder why we're cranky and stressed and tired. A lot of times we get sick. You know, we pick up bugs because we're running so low. And so we really need to flip the list over upside down and put as the highest priority, what do I need to do every day? I need to eat healthy food. I need to get out for some fresh air and a walk. I need to make sure I'm getting enough sleep. You know, I mean, those are just real fundamental things. But if we can be very intentional about spending that time on ourselves, everything else goes so much more smoothly. And that's why I wrote the book, too, and I formatted the book in a way that would make it really short and accessible for women, that they could get up and first thing in the morning or maybe for a few minutes before they go to sleep, take that time to reflect and journal and, you know, re-plug into source so that they've got that nourishment going on as well.
I love that, too. And keeping that gratitude journal through your book and or just year-round as well. So who are some of the people you've helped with stress, whether it's at the holiday time or any time during the year? Can you tell us sort of about some of your clients or people that you've helped, some stories?
Sure. Well, there's a couple of surprising things that have come up that have really been a blessing for the book and for the people who've read it. And one of them is that I've had a married couple, several of them, read the book together. And I gave a talk at a church a few years back and had the books available, and a woman came and bought the book, and I can't remember if she bought one or two copies of it, but anyway, she came, and then they, you know, if I speak for myself, they enjoyed me so much, they invited me back the following year to speak again, and so it was so nice to be back with that group, and the woman came back to me, and she said, "I need to tell you something," and I said, "Yes," and she said, "Last year I bought your book and I took it home and I invited my husband to do it with me." And she said, "At first I didn't think he would do it because this really isn't his thing. But after a few days he kind of got into it." And Brenda, I'll tell you, she started to choke up and her eyes welled up with tears. And she looked at me and she said, "It was one of the best holiday seasons my husband and I have ever had."
Aww.
Yes. And,
that's,
you know,
awesome.
Such a simple thing. So I just loved hearing that a couple would embrace it and use it as a way to deepen their own relationship and spend that time together.
Well, and it's also, she, you know, thought initially he wouldn't do it, but then he surprised her by agreeing to do it. So, you know, sometimes we put expectations on our partners that oh, they're not going to go for this. You know, this is too touchy-feely. But then, you know, if you ask sincerely with an open heart and not, don't prejudge the answer, you know, they may surprise you and say, yeah, sure. Or just say, can we start this for a couple of days and just see, just give it a try. And, you know, I think guys, will, you know, I think both spouses, whether it's the male, female, or whoever, it's sometimes there is one who's more, shall we say, into spiritual topics and another who is, you know, at a different point on their journey, shall we say. And, you know, we can all teach each other. And this is a great thing for couples. I like that idea about a couple working with the book together. Who are some other stories that have worked with the book? So book clubs, church groups, married couples, have there been a parent and their child at all?
You know, I've had mothers and daughters who have been involved in the program, and like one or the other will gift the other with the book, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when we're together tomorrow at the at Butterfly and Moon, there'll be a special sale price on the books, 2 for $20. And one of the things I love to encourage women to do is go ahead and pick up a couple copies of the book, keep one for yourself and gift one to another friend, and then do the book together. And as you were saying about, you know, going shopping or carving out a little special time, the book is a great way to kind of structure an excuse to meet for a cup of coffee or just even talk on the phone. And, you know, if they just make a commitment to touch base with each other once a week, they can talk about how they're experiencing the book and what are some of the reflections that have been meaningful to them, and creates a really nice space where they can share hearts and connect that way. So that's been a really beautiful thing for women. And the other one that has come to mind, too, is that there have been several instances where people have been facing the first holiday season without a dear loved one.
And that's a biggie.
It is a biggie. Yeah, and so I've been so honored to know that the book has been a support to people in that circumstance too. It wasn't written with that intention explicitly, but I do have one reflection where I talk about how my feelings around the holidays have changed over the years. And one of the instances that I cite is the first holiday without my dad. And so that really resonates with people. And I'm honored to know that they could take comfort in the book as a way to help themselves during that first season that can be so painful.
Well, let's talk about that, because I've known a lot of people that have lost a parent. I've had several friends this year who've lost their husband suddenly. And I just recently had a very close friend who was a young mother who died suddenly of a brain aneurysm and heart attack, and you know, leaves behind 3 children. And so, what are some tips for going through the holidays with that first set of holidays without that loved one, a parent or spouse or someone?
Sure. Well, a real practical thing that we did that first year that my dad was no longer with us in person, he certainly was with us in spirit, we purchased a pillar candle in his favorite color and put it in a special plate, and that became our symbolic presence of dad at our family gatherings.
Aww.
So we had that candle lit. Go ahead.
I love that, and I've heard also people talk about creating an altar, you know, either your fireplace or it can be a dresser top or a buffet, where you have put out pictures of the person and a candle, you know, and like you said, every night at dinner you light that candle in their memory. Some people have come into the store. I like to ask people, what are the symbols that you associate with that person? You know, for me it was butterflies every time. I saw a butterfly, I thought of my mother because she loved butterflies, and it's part of the story of how Butterfly and Moon came about. But for other people, it's a bird or it's a certain animal, and sometimes it's a feeling or just, you know, the wind or something. But it's really getting in touch with what those things are, writing about them in your journal, sharing them and not keeping it private, but sharing it with someone else in your family. Go ahead.
The realities of how we grieve, you know, that I've heard the image that grief hits you like a wave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's so has been so in my experience that, you know, it's like you'll be walking along the beach and everything is just fine, and then all of a sudden, boom, it hits you. And I think we, as a culture, put a whole lot of energy into trying to hold that wave back rather than just kind of riding it, you know. And,
yeah.
You know, and so, I mean, this is good for grieving whatever time of the year, but I think especially in the holidays is to just be so gentle with yourself when those feelings come up and just, you know, give yourself permission to cry when you need to cry. And it kind of, it's like it lets off the steam a little bit, you know. I know I'm mixing my metaphors here, but when we let ourselves cry, it releases some of that pressure and it becomes a little bit easier. Because sure, you're going to be sad. Of course you miss this person that you love and who has had such a significant part in your life. And so it's totally appropriate that you would feel sad. I think our culture tells us too much.
Right.
Be strong. Push through.
Right.
And no, you know, we need
I
to
agree.
Be able to live in that sadness too.
I totally agree. I mean, the first set of holidays after my mother died, you know, I was just in a department store and I saw a pattern of dishes, you know, like a Royal Albert teapot or teacup, and it burst into tears because it just reminded me of something she had. And so it is okay. And I have noticed in my own family that people that have been able to grieve and give themselves permission to cry and to talk about it have healed in a more productive way than others that haven't done so, you know, have stuffed themselves with food or with, you know, other people, you know, out in the world might do alcohol or drugs or something to stuff those feelings. And like you said, ride that wave. Don't try to hold it back and give yourself permission to cry. Those are all so important. Now, you release a lot of your own personal stress probably through writing and blogging. Tell us a little bit about your daily practice of writing and about your blog and some of the topics you've covered recently. I want to get to the topic. I loved the one that you wrote about in defense of wearing an R2-D2 dress to homecoming. I thought that was really cute. But let's talk about your daily practice of writing and how you work out your own issues or understanding things through blogging and writing.
Oh, thanks for asking. Well, as I mentioned earlier, those morning pages are really critical for me. I do those nearly every morning, and that's a big part of the practice. And those pages are not intended to be saved. You know, those are intended to be a safe space where you can just dump whatever's on your mind. And I keep them in a notebook, and then every so often I'll yank out a handful of pages, and that becomes kindling for the fire, and I just release whatever was on those pages. But from time to time during that morning time, I'll get an inspiration for something that I want to write about. So I will jot down a note or two so that I don't forget. And that's why I save the pages for a little while so I don't lose anything that comes up. So that's another part of the practice then, is to have the tools at hand to catch the ideas when they come. So I have several notebooks kind of floating around my house. There's one on my nightstand. I have a couple on my desk. I have one in my purse. And oftentimes, so when something strikes me, I just have to be really disciplined about jotting down something that will help me remember. For years, I think, oh, I'll remember that. And then when I sit down to the computer, it's just gone out of my head.
It's true. And I think that's a good practical tip to carry journals with you and have them in different rooms. And, you know, when that inspiration comes, and even if it's in the middle of the night, I've noticed that if I can't sleep or something wakes me up at 3 or 4 in the morning, rather than laying there for an hour, you know, get up and just write it down, whether it's a to-do list or maybe it's a solution. Sometimes I've gotten solutions to problems or challenges in the middle of the night, because I think our angel guides or our, in, you know, the higher intelligence in the universe, you know, feeds us this information, and you may forget about it come morning, but just jot it down, and then it's, like you said, it's out of your head, and the next day you'll read it and say, gee, did I write all that?
That's right, yeah, and I guess I'm a little old-fashioned that way, too, that I still love to use pen and paper. I know a lot of folks are very savvy with their smartphones. They might have a little notepad on their phone, and they can put their ideas in there as well, so, you know, you're not limited to carrying an extra thing with you. If you've already got your phone, you can use it that way. But I know, too, that oftentimes the best way for me to write is that way, is in longhand first, that I just sit down and when I've got an inspiration an idea like that R2-D2 dress piece that you mentioned a minute ago, that started with me just, I had been mulling over the idea for a while, walking through this with my daughter, and then I finally just said, well, I got to write about this. And so I sat down with a notebook and a pen and just poured it out. And oftentimes that first draft, Anne Lamott calls it the first shitty draft, if you pardon the expression.
I love Anne Lamott.
I know, isn't she terrific?
Oh, my God.
She says it's really important to get that first shitty draft out, because if it's out on the paper, then you can work with it. But if you're still kicking it around in your head, you can't work with it. So I take that term very, very seriously, and I pour out that first draft with as little editing as I possibly can and as honestly as I possibly can. And I can always edit and pull back on what I have said, but that to me is a key part of the process, is just being as open as possible to what my thoughts and feelings are and getting them out, no matter how many words it takes, to just get it out in front of me so then I can start really working with it.
Well, let's talk about that, getting it out. So there's a part of the writing process that is, you know, just for the writer to express their feelings and thoughts. Now, when it involves another person, say someone in your family or someone you know, I mean, do you ever have instances in your case where your kids may say, gee, Mom, I don't want you to be writing about this on your blog, and have you had to censor some things from being published? Because I think that does hold people back, like they may want to write about something that's been painful or difficult, and yet they don't want maybe the person to see it at any point.
Yeah, it's a delicate balance. I know that Anne Lamott has said if they didn't want to get written about, they should have behaved better.
Oh, my God, that's awesome.
I know, I put that in passive voice. I'm not paraphrasing it quite right, but so, and she has been an author I've really admired for the level of honesty with which she's shared in her own memoirs. It's really profound. So, you know, that's an ongoing, your question is an ongoing one for me. I think I felt freer to write about my girls when they were younger, and now as they've gotten older, I'm more circumspect about what I put out, and I try to make my reflections more about me as a mom and how I'm relating to them, telling their story for them. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, in the case of the R2-D2 dress piece, I told my daughter that I was working on it, and she gave me the thumbs up. And then when I got the draft ready to submit, I had her read it. And what was very interesting for me in that experience was that I projected some of my own high school experience onto her. And she caught me on that. And, I mean, she wouldn't have seen it that way, but what it was that, you know, this had to do, just for the benefit of our listeners who haven't read the piece, my daughter opted to wear a dress that looks like R2-D2, the character from Star Wars, to her homecoming events rather than a more traditional or, you know, expected kind of cocktail party dress or, you know, semi-formal dress. And I wrote a little bit about the uproar that this caused among her circle of friends. And in commenting on that, I said that the comments that had gotten back to her, I said that they stung, but that she still moved ahead and, you know, knew in her heart that this is what she wanted to do. And she read the whole piece, and that was the only part that she circled back to. She said, "Mom, this is all fine, but I got to tell you, what they said about me didn't sting." And that was my stuff. The feeling stung was from when I was in high school, and I would have wanted to have done what my daughter did, but was afraid of the backlash, and so was more conservative in choices that I made in high school. So, you know, my daughter's kind of my hero in that way, that she moved forward with this in the face of this criticism that she got from some of her peers. But it never really hurt her in the same way that it did me all the years ago that I was in high school. So I just love that whole, how that whole process unfolded for me behind the scenes. Writing it, she helped to heal some of my old wounds just by being her own brave and strong self that, you know, had such a strong sense of her own self and was willing to live out of that. That really held a mirror up to me and helped me be a better person in my own right at this age.
Awesome. And I think it's awesome that you're open, you know, that you're vulnerable enough to have your daughter tell you something honestly and to be able to hear it with an open heart and accept it and learn from it. I think, you know, my mother was very old-fashioned and very strict, and, you know, you just don't share things, you know. So,
oh, right. Mine too. Yeah.
So I think it's very interesting, multi-generational things. And so tell us about your third book. Well, actually, we need to backtrack. We're talking about mothers and daughters. We should talk about Prepare Your Heart to Be a Great Mom, because that is such a cute book for an expectant mother or a new mother. I've recommended it to many of our customers at Butterfly and Moon. Great gift for a baby shower. So tell us about that book and what inspired it.
Thank you. Yeah, well, that was kind of the natural progression for me, is that I first wrote about the Christmas season and my love of it and a desire to make it a more peaceful and spiritual time for people. And then by extension, too, it was really out of that experience as a mom at Christmas time that then that grew into, well, what are some of the lessons from mothering and motherhood that I've learned? Who are some of the role models that I've had in my life who have helped me be a better mom? And so I carried that same format from the Christmas book into the mom book and created a series of reflections that really any mom could pick up at any point and, again, have a quick and easy way to create some quiet time for herself in the midst of a busy day. And then one of the things I added between the two books is that the mom's book features a weekly retreat. And there are a few extra pages with some additional reflection questions and opportunities to journal. And the process is 4 weeks in total. And so I invite the mom who's working the book to take a little extended quiet time once a week and answer those questions and reflect on how their experience of the book had been during the prior week and, you know, what were some of their learnings, what were some of the new insights that they'd gotten, and then what are some of the things they want to carry into the coming week that will help them in their mothering and in keeping their life balanced. So, again, it just kind of grew out of my own experience and what I thought would be of help to moms like myself who really want to be good at what we do but don't want to lose ourselves in the process.
And, I mean, the role of working moms has changed in just even in my lifetime since the 60s. How has it changed in your lifetime? You're an entrepreneur, you're an artist, you're an author, you're a working mom working from home. Did you ever work outside the home?
I did. I worked full-time for my 20s and up until my early 30s when Abby, my oldest, is now 22, and when she was about 2 or 3 years of age, I was able to drop back to a part-time position, but still outside the home. And so I was juggling her daycare needs and my work in that time. And then in the early 2000s, I was able to secure a job that could be home-based, and so I ran a home-based business for a long time, and then that eventually morphed into my own consulting business and my writing and that kind of thing. So I, you know, for the last, wow, 10 to 15 years, I've been home-based with a couple of jaunts in between for full-time employment during that time. So it's constant, for me, it's constantly been kind of an assessment of, you know, what are my family's needs? What can I commit to? How can I be most present to my daughters? And how can I keep this work alive that has come to mean so much to me? You know, my own writing and speaking and opportunities to express myself creatively that way. So,
wow.
Yeah, so back to your original question, I think part of it for me was that I was trying to carve out a situation where I wasn't working full-time outside of the home, and I had a lot of difficulty finding daycare that was adaptable to that, you know, because there's just certain business constraints for daycare settings where they need staff and they need to be able to employ them on a full-time basis, and if someone is only looking for a part-time situation, you know, it can be a little more difficult to carve that out, so I had cobbled together a combination of neighborhood caregivers and families backup and, you know, just almost on a day-to-day basis sometimes was able to put it together. You know, my brother had a great bit of wisdom. He raised three girls with his wife, and he said, you know, Maria, it all runs really well as long as nobody gets sick.
And, you know, if there's some illusion of perfection, yeah.
Right, the machine can run as long as everybody stays healthy, but then as soon as somebody gets sick, then it all gets thrown in. And so as a mom, I felt that acutely because I wanted to be present to take care of my girls and give them the care that they needed. And
so now you're working on a third book. Your daughters are getting older, and now you're tackling book three. Is it going to be in the same format of Prepare Your Heart for Something, or is it going to be a totally different format?
It is. It's a totally different format. I'm trying a new genre. I'm writing in fiction. I'm writing a novel.
Mm.
And I never thought I would be writing fiction. But my dear husband gave me a book last Christmas that really sparked this whole thing. It was written by the man who's the spearhead of the National Novel Writing Month every year, Chris Batts. And it's called No Plot, No Problem. And he says, if you always wanted to write a book, but, you know, don't think you have your story set up or you don't think you're ready to get started, he says, we can do that. We've got a process to do it. And so I started working the process in that book and discovered that I think I can write fiction. I've heard fiction writers talk about how characters show up and start informing the writer, letting them know what they would say and what circumstances they would be in and how the plot would progress. And I had never experienced that before because my writing had been more reflective or, you know, memoir kinds of things. And so it's really been a delightful surprise to find that I have characters emerging and I love each and every one of them. And I sit and when I write, I just have to be open to what they want to show me and where the story is going to go.
So you didn't have a preconceived notion of all the twists and turns of the characters. They're sort of developing themselves and taking a life or taking on a life of their own as you are in the process.
Yes. Yes.
So do you think books are written beginning, middle, and end, or do you think they evolve in concentric circles?
Oh, gosh. You know, I'll bet it's different for every writer. But my sense would be that the writer who's really open to the craft has to be open to stories developing in a really organic, spontaneous way. I think the writer that comes in with too heavy-handed an idea of this is exactly how the plot has to go and this is exactly how the characters have to go, they might miss some of the magic along the way that comes up in the creative process. So I think that there's a balance between having a general idea of the subject that you want to cover and how that story arc might go, but then as you move into the process to be open to how what twists and turns might come up and what new ideas might emerge.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's... And then sometimes, you know, you can write several different vignettes and then link them all together. And, you know, I sort of liken it to, you know, making a quilt. You know you're going to have these certain squares and these certain things, and you may not know the overall pattern. But, you know, every writer is different. And like you said, just start doing it, whether it's just 5 minutes a day, set a timer and just start, and then don't edit yourself. And that's the beauty of the morning pages, is that those aren't edited. They're just getting you in the habit of, and, you know, I think a lot of people have gotten away from longhand writing on a notebook because everyone's using their digital device. But there is something wonderful about the motion of the pen across the paper. And I can tell from my journal writing, you know, if I'm angry, it's, you know, big giant letters and dark ink. And if I'm being, you know, if I'm not censoring myself, it's just a very free flow form. And for some people, it's doodling. And there was this whole process about opening up your creativity with writing with your left hand. Have you tried that or studied any of that?
I have. I've done a little bit of that. Yeah.
Can you talk about
dominant
that?
Hand. I've journaled a little bit with where the dominant hand answers a question and then the asks a question and then the non-dominant hand answers it. And it's been fun to see. And what I find particularly endearing about that is that the writing that comes out of the non-dominant hand looks so childlike, because it's not practiced, you know. And so I think there's something really beautiful and vulnerable about those words on the page. There's just something really pure that touches into a part of ourselves that maybe we don't listen to often enough.
Mm-hmm. And so what's your target date to get your book done? You think it'll be out next year?
Yes, yes. My husband Steve and I were just talking about this last night, is that I'd like to have it by next fall. And so that's my target. And so right now I'm working on, I have since kind of fleshed out where the arc of the story is going to go. The individual characters and their stories are still emerging. And so right now I'm getting my first draft out just to get the ideas out and to set the scenes. And then I'll be circling back to do more of the editing and the tightening up and bringing in the detail that helps to make those scenes come alive.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to that, and we will definitely have to have you on Alive to Thrive again next year for talking about your new book. We're talking with Maria Rogers O'Rourke, and we want to make the distinction that she is Maria Rogers O'Rourke because there is another writer out there named Maria O'Rourke. Can you talk about that? We talk about identity theft, but there's sometimes mistaken identity where there's other people out in the world with our same name. I was always surprised when I found out, you know, locally there's a state representative or something named Barbara Fraser, and I'm often mistaken. But there is another Brenda Fraser out there in the world, and so I often use my middle initial as well. But how did that come up, and how did you find out that there was another Maria O'Rourke?
Isn't that funny? Well, every so often I would get an email or a phone call, and the topic was generally related to a conference that had to do with healthcare and with nursing. And I actually had a client at St. John's Mercy Hospital. And so at first when they started appearing, I thought that maybe I was getting a referral from my contact at Mercy Hospital. But then, when I would reply to it, I discovered that there is a very accomplished and prominent nurse who does public speaking and has written, and her name is Maria O'Rourke, and I'd love to meet her sometime. So, you know, there's a joke about Googling yourself, you know, how vain do you have to be to Google yourself, you know, but
everybody
I did that.
Everybody should.
You know, you really should, yeah. And so I Googled Maria O'Rourke, and that was when I discovered that she was out there. And so when that comes up from time to time, you know, I just refer them to her. And I've never met her, but I hope to someday. She seems like a lovely person.
Very cool. So what are you doing special this year? Do you have certain holiday traditions that you do every year, and are you trying something new this year? So those are two separate questions. What are your traditions? And then what are you trying new this year?
One of our long-standing traditions was started by my mother-in-law. Steve's mom would give her children a special Christmas ornament every year.
Mm.
And we've continued that tradition with our girls. And so as they're getting older, they each need their own ornament box now to store the annual ornament that she's gotten. But that's a whole lot of fun. I love to, some years they get the same ornament, some years I'll find one that just suits them really well. I'm glad my youngest isn't listening because hers has a Star Wars theme to it, of course. so that's a tradition that we've maintained. Excuse me. Last year we started a new one with doing a puzzle. And I know that sounds kind of corny, but we all sit around the table and put a puzzle together.
I love it. And it's, you know, I used to be such a workaholic that I never could do a puzzle. I thought it was, you know, a waste of time, or I couldn't sit still or something. And now I've given myself permission to make puzzles in front of the fireplace with nice music on, and it's awesome. And, you know, things like adult coloring books are coming into vogue as well. And they have them. I saw them at Joann's, and they're different places. But those are just ways to open up your creativity. And I love, you know, I think puzzle making is something so soothing. And you talked about ornaments. We have a lot of artists, local women artists at Butterfly and Moon. Several of them have made special ornaments for this season. We have these beautiful mosaics. They're made with vintage jewelry, and they're put on a wooden ornament. Those are wonderful keepsakes because they're just one of a kind. That's our artist, Barb Lillis. And then we have some stained glass ornaments. But one of our painters, Vicki White, did some scenes around St. Charles. She's noted for her paintings of buildings and places in St. Charles. And we had these two ornaments, and these women came in. They were from out of state, and they had grown up in St. Charles. And so they were so excited to see these ornaments with these scenes of St. Charles. And from that, they went to the prince, and one of the ladies, her grandmother knew the woman who owned Miss Amy B's tea house. It was a restaurant here in town, and her grandfather's sister or someone in her family tree was the ghost at Lewis and Clark. I mean, there was all these amazing stories that came out of that started just from looking at an ornament. I think ornaments trigger memories and certainly things that you can write about. One incredible special thing to do is to get an ornament that records a voice, and to do that with your parents and your grandparents. We did that with Patrice's father in, I think it was 2007. He had moved up here. We recorded his voice in just before Christmas in that December of 2007. And a week later, he had a massive stroke, and he never was able to speak again. And we have every year this ornament that we can play him saying, "Happy, you know, Merry Christmas, ho, ho, ho." And it just gives you goosebumps, you know, to hear the voice of your loved one. You were talking about, you know, surviving the holidays and coping with the holidays without a parent or a loved one. But having that ornament with their voice on it is a really cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, any closing thoughts? What authors are you reading now, Maria?
Right now I'm reading Brené Brown's Rising Strong. It's a wonderful guide to acknowledging and embracing where we have fallen in life and recognizing the lessons that we learn and reappropriating those as we move forward. So, I love Brené Brown. She's really the real deal.
Yeah. I want to get her on Alive to Thrive for sure. Any other recommendations of books you've read this year that to share with our listeners?
You know, if you've got a Beatle fan in your life, there's a wonderful book by a local author, and it's called Octopus's Garden.
Oh, my
goodness.
And
the author's name is Aaron Mermelstein, and he goes back to the days when the Paul is Dead controversy was swirling. And tells the story of two young men who are DJs at their college, on their college radio station, and they get swept up in discerning what all the clues mean, and they get drawn into this secret world with the Beatles. And it's just a wonderful, fun read for Beatles
cool.
fans.
Cool. Well,
and,
that's
you know,
one on my holiday reading list.
Yeah.
I'll have to tell Santa that's the one of the books I want. That sounds awesome, and maybe we can get Aaron on the program as well. Well, very good, and I want to make sure people know how to find you on your website and certainly on Facebook. Maria has a page for her book, Prepare Your Heart for a Great Christmas. So make sure you go and like that page. I've just invited about 40 or 50 people to go look at that page. And then what's your other website page?
Thank you. My author page is my name, Maria Rogers O'Rourke, and it's linked. They can link to that from the Facebook page as well. There's a D in Rogers, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. And then you have a website, greatchristmasbook.com, where you can, you know, get some tips for, you know, releasing stress during the holiday season. There's a little video of Maria there. You can contact her. There's testimonials and her some past articles she's written. So that's a fantastic little website. And then, of course, we welcome people to go to butterflyandmoon.com. And each of our authors that we carry at the store have a little profile page. And come down tomorrow on Saturday, December 5. That is tomorrow's date, correct? The days have been flying by. So that means Christmas is in 20 days. But come by tomorrow afternoon, 2 o'clock. We're going to have some holiday cookies. Maria will be signing her books. She'll be personalizing them. You can ship them. We can ship them for you. If you want to mail them to some, you know, you can buy 10 books for that great price, 2 for $20. That's an awesome price for Prepare Your Heart for a Great Christmas. And we'll ship them for you so they get there before Christmas Day. And you can also get the Kindle version for yourself. That's also available. So come on down to Butterfly and Moon this weekend. And again, thank you, Maria, so much for being on Alive to Thrive.
Oh, you're so welcome, Brenda. And thanks so much to you and Patrice for supporting my books and getting them out there to the folks in St. Charles and everyone who listens to this show. So I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Well, everyone have a nice weekend, and we'll see you next week on Friday, December 11th. We'll be interviewing Zach Alberti, one of the artists also featured at Butterfly Moon. Everyone have a nice weekend. Be safe.